So I was estranged from the group that I came up in Vegas. There was a group called the Renegades of Comedy. Myself and my dear friend Shuli, most recently from the Howard Stern Show, doing his own thing now. We had two other gentlemen with us, Jason Kiefer and a gentleman named Mike Potter. We were based on the Outlaws of Comedy, which was Bill Hicks and Sam Kennison. These were people who influenced us. So we were in a group, and I wasn't carrying my weight, if we can be so blunt. I was terrible. I had moments of being decent at this. I tried to be very weird. I was really into Andy Kaufman and some anti-comedy and shit like that. And my boys stopped calling me, and I stopped being involved in things they were plotting. It hurt. It hurt badly. And I was barely getting up, and I just moved out from living with my grandparents, and I was deep 40 minutes away from where I grew up and where everyone's from. Some weird isolation, and I was questioning decisions. Did I want to be a comedian? What was I going to do in these early to mid-20s? Barely getting up as a comedian. I mean, I was a comedian in name only and just giving myself the name. I'm a comedian. Wasn't shit. But I felt I had talent. And I think Shuli made a peace offering to me. I think he's the one who told me that there was going to be an audition at a casino, the Sunset Station in Las Vegas, an open call for comedians. And they were going to take the top four, and there's going to be a big event. It's like a star search. I think it might have even been called Vegas Star Search. And if you're not familiar, if you're younger, Star Search was a syndicated TV show in the 80s up to the 90s where they'd have models and singers and comedians. It's kind of an America's Got Talent, but they broke everyone into brackets. So comedians weren't going against goddamn jugglers and shit like that. Some great comics came out of there, Sinbad, Dave Chappelle, great people. So I figured I had nothing to lose. I showed up, and I don't think I really cared. I don't think I dressed up or anything. I kind of had the devil may care. Whatever, I'll do it. I got to see some people I hadn't seen in a while. It was cool. I went on towards the end, and I kind of was like, I'm just going to be who I am. I was caught in that. It was time for me to go up, and I did my thing. And I'm telling you, Andy Kaufman nonsense. I was doing anti-comedy. I was doing anti-impressions where I would ask people, hey, give me an impression. I can do anyone. And they would be like, Sylvester Stallone. And I would do fucking a Ronnie Dangerfield joke in The Voice. And I had like two or three go-tos. I also had a couple other really weird things. For some reason, well, not some reason, I understand. There was judges, and there were like local DJs and people like that. People never left the Vegas market, bounced around from different radio stations. People like that. The reason it worked, it was a room full of comedians. It was a bunch of backroom weirdo shit, and it worked. I made the final four with my dear friend Shuli, with Kathleen Dunbar, who is a regular at the Comedy Cellar in Vegas, and a gentleman named D-Lays. Very funny. He's toured around, done all kinds of cool things, TV credits. It's a nice list to be a part of. What a fluke I was. So I made it. I felt good, everybody. And now we're going to get to why I'm telling you this story. It isn't to brag that I made the final four of Vegas is Funny in like 2008 or 9. What happened is we had 2 weeks or a month to hype up the big show, the Star Search. Boy, I think I stopped home where I grew up after passing the audition, and I was handed like 20 passes or 40 passes, whatever the shit was. I told my grandparents, and I felt proud. Remember, I shouldn't have been a comedian. No one wants your kid to be a comedian, especially your grandkid who you had to raise. Your last of the Mohicans. But I felt justified. And I felt justified even with the boys, with Julie and them. See, I am a comedian. See, they get my weirdo act. How weird is it? Well, I hyped it up as much as you can then before social media and went and gave tickets, called people. I just left the job a few months before I went to my old job and tried to get passes. Only one person could go, this old server who was like a mentor to me named Marco. Got all these random people and all my family was going out. It was a Thursday night at the Sunset Station. They put us in this big showroom. It's full of people, civilians. The energy was through the roof. I'm backstage with models and singers, and it was just a wild talent show, and I'm surrounded by it, and I'm in my head, and I'm nervous. But I decide to dance with the girl who got me there. Being a weirdo, anti-comedy. And I did the anti-impressions to this sound, this reaction. Silence. My act died so badly. My grandfather is the only time my grandfather ever saw me do stand-up comedy. Person I've idolized and sometimes when I've been drunk enough said the only son of a bitch I ever cared about. That's another story, my friends. My grandma was there. My aunt and uncle, who are now like parents to me. Other aunts and uncles, friends of the family. Marco, who I have not seen to this day. Whoever the feeling went back to the Black Angus I worked at in North Las Vegas was like, good thing you don't work here no more. We got some dead weight. I can't convey to you how embarrassing and sad it was thinking that you're an artist. Bombing, and not just bombing. Bombing being different. And not being good at being different. I mean, this is now humans, not comedians. This isn't backroom laughter. This is having to entertain people. And you look like a psychopath. I wish I knew some of my other bits. You had to work clean. Oh, it was just so bad. The only laugh I got was an ad lib because I had overheard a model before. And I just said it. I was struggling, and I just, at this point, you might as well just throw a Hail Mary for yourself. There's a model backstage going, this dress, my nipples are showing. My nipples are showing. What am I going to do? And I ad-libbed, when? I went from absolute silence and garbage and wanting to jump into a lake with floaties made of bricks to a laugh that just erupted the roof. If I would have stopped there, I would have had a chance to win because we're matched up. It's me and Kathleen Dunbar and Shuli and Delay were in the other bracket. And I had to go back to the goddamn well and do another stupid anti-comedy bit, inside horse shit. And it went again from an absolute volcano of laughter off an ad lib to, I mean, we're in a casino. The buffet was probably a football field away, and you could hear them talking. That's how bad I was bombing with the silence. You could hear people at the buffet be like, I already had enough chicken. You know what I'd like? I'd like some salmon right now. You're hearing that. And then the worst part, facing everyone and them having to lie. Oh, not bad, kid. All right, there's potential. You knew you did shitty. I probably asked, did I do okay? You realize how horrible it is that you have to ask someone to lie to you to make you feel good. And then you question them and you kind of get mad at them. What? These fucking liars. Well, you want them to, you son of a bitch. You think your grandma wanted to lie? She was a kid when the war started. She don't need your shit. Went to a bar, my regular bar. My aunt and her friends, who I knew since I was a kid, and they were comedy people, and they were drinking. We were all drinking, and the guy, He wasn't too horrible about it. And I could tell he was sincere, this dude. He's like, hey, man, this wasn't your night. But I can see if you stick with this, you have a shot to do something. It's the nicest thing anyone said to me. And I could tell that that was pretty fucking legit, that you wouldn't say it like that. Well, eventually I changed and I had a come to Jesus moment. I started writing jokes. But that isn't what I'm, this isn't what this episode is about. About 11 minutes in, this episode is about sharing with you the anxiety of performing for your friends and family and the disappointment in bombing and failing with them. It's something that's going to happen quite a bit. And it's part of this journey, and it's okay. It's fun to laugh at now, and if you haven't gone through it, it's not going to be funny for you when it happens, but maybe this will shed some light on you to take a step back and go, in the long run, it's going to disappear, this pain and embarrassment, but it's fucking tough. It is tough to bomb in front of your family. I've done it. I've done it in front of friends. I've had friends of mine, roommates, tell the bartenders at that same bar, Patty's Pub in Las Vegas, rest in peace. That's right, I just did a rest in peace for a bar. Some real Vegas shit there. I've had them tell bartenders, you know, when this kid's good, he's all right. But man, sometimes I don't understand what the fuck he's saying. I had a bartender off shift sitting next to me, drunk as McGee. I don't think that's a saying, but drunk as a McGee, telling me this, making me feel low. Once again, I thought that I crushed every time in front of this roommate, but he was a little more honest, not around me. This is part of it. This is a rite of passage in a way to look back and go, oh my God, all those times of your friends being there and doing well, and you think you're great, and then one day you see what really can happen. It's humbling, man. In New York City, and I think other places, there's bringer shows. And what happens is people, hence the word bringer, bring friends and family, and they go in. Sometimes the more people you get, the more minutes you get. And they'll be ran by probably a former comic who either wants to work on stuff and still do comedy or doesn't and just wants to hang out. And usually people do well and they sprinkle in pros and sometimes put a pro hosting. It depends on who, what club and who's booking it. And those shows are great. And people go up there and it's usually like when their first few times, first 20 times, and people are so excited in New York City. You get a lot of people from the suburbs. They don't go to the city often. Now they're in Manhattan on like an afternoon or a night, weeknight, being adventurous, having drinks. And there's nephew Gina. Well, that was a fun slip. Nephew Johnny and niece Gina, whatever. Hey, it could be a nephew Gina. It's 2021, baby. And they're just happy, and they sell all the jokes. And it's great, isn't it? Isn't that nice? And so a lot of people leave there. They came in nervous, and they leave thinking they're fucking King Kong. And I had that in Vegas where friends would come my first couple shows, packed it with my coworkers, and bam, it's great, and I'm the greatest of all time, and I want to crowd surf, be passed around like a conquering champion of a third world country. Thank you for saving us, sir, with your cock jokes. And then eventually, to take a phrase from the song that Johnny Cash sang, God comes and cuts you down. And I've been cut down, baby. You think you're invincible. And eventually you're like, I don't want friends and family at this show. Because I don't trust them. And a lot of times people will just laugh at anything. It got to the point when people would come see me. And I honestly resented their laughs. Because sometimes it would only be them. It's like, oh, you're just trying to get me on the board. Oh, you're just trying to show me that you love me. I know you love me. I mean, you came to this shit all in Vegas with bullets in the glass to see me do stand up. I got resentful. I stopped asking people. And when the few times people would show up, I felt pressure. I have to kill. It's a tough thing that we have to separate. These people are still going to love you, no matter how bad you do. We need to remind ourselves that. And let's be perfectly blunt. If they stop loving you because of your act, well, fuck. I don't think you really need them to love you, my friend. But it's a pressure, and you want people to be proud of you. Your coworkers come and see you. You don't want them to whisper at the water cooler. Todd's garbage. He should stop chasing this dream. You want them going, we want him to get out of here. He's too talented to be here. You want him to treat you like that car in Goodwill Hunting, where every day you show up, they're like, we want you to not show up. We want you to know that you're doing your calling. And they will. But sometimes, they fucking won't. And that is part of this. So, should you invite your friends and family? Of course, in the beginning. Let them laugh at your 5 or 6 minutes and enjoy it. With everyone else, if you're doing a bringer show or something like that, some showcase. Get yourself some confidence. I just used an analogy a minute ago. Get yourself on the board. They say in football, the toughest points to get are the first ones. So get a field goal. Get whatever you can. Get on the board. The rest will come easy. Get a couple good sets. Or shall I be so brave and say kills in front of you to get you a little bit of confidence. Don't get overconfident because, let's be honest, that kill probably isn't a real kill. But know that. And then based on your comfort, you know, I really felt it was boot camp when I would stop having people come and see me. It took me years in New York to let anyone visiting come see me, and I got too nervous for years. I probably would be right now if someone showed up. I have to impress them. It's a weird thing because people you love and you know, they will say shit like this your whole, you know, every time they see you, hopefully, I guess. It's a weird hopefully. I'll explain why. There's a chance when people come and see you and they saw you when you began, they'll say, man, you've gotten better. That's good. That's progress, right? You don't want to say, man, you were so much better your third gig. Year 10 is pretty crazy. I thought you'd be way better. You don't want that shit. But I got to a point where I saw some people didn't see me in like 7 years. They saw me in New York and I did my thing. Man, I'm so shocked at how much better you are. Oh, that I've done it for 12 years now, 13 years, and I'm making a living in New York? Did you think I was going to be horrible? I was going to go up there and be like, hello, my name is, and not even know my name and just stutter and make click sounds like Spike Jones in the 30s? I mean, what are we doing? So I hated people coming to see me. Because you always think you're being fully judged. But you probably aren't. I almost wonder if friends and family like seeing their comrades, the people they love, on stage because of the pressure to enjoy it. That's a way to look at it. Hey, I'm uncomfortable. Think about how uncomfortable they are. They have to, if I'm not good, they have to make the decision to lie to me or not. And mad love to everyone who doesn't lie. Mad love to you. You might not get talked to by your friend or cousin or sister or spouse after they do their show. You might get the cold goddamn shoulder for telling them that they're trash. Or being as nice as possible. Man. I don't think that worked. That wasn't effective. You shouldn't do that. I don't know if I would continue with this. You need to make some adjustments. But bravo to anyone who can handle that in a good, classy, non-asshole way. Because people need to hear the truth. It hurts. It stings to know that at one time you're not good at something. Especially something you love. But if you don't know the truth, you can't get better. If you can't get better, you can't do this full time. You can't get lied to. So mad love to all those people. I gave you a little golf clap. It's the middle of the night. Well, I'm recording this because I'm a psychopath. I remember being in town. I did not go back for the first Christmas, as we've discussed in this podcast in the past. Showed up in January. And I watched the Super Bowl when it was still in January. And I hyped up. I was playing the venue where myself and Shuli and the boys used to run after I got back into the crew. And I had done a pop-in. I came back. I got flown in September for something. And I went and did a pop-in at that place and crushed. It was great. So now I'm coming back and everyone's coming to see me and I feel like I'm the fucking champ of the world, dude. I get there, for some reason I'm nervous because everyone's telling me they're coming. I promoted, like, on, I believe, MySpace back then, the good old days of MySpace. And now there's an expectation. And I went up there and all my friends, we had a Super Bowl party, and my former roommate and one of his current roommates were dating sisters. Two beautiful redheads, and they liked hanging with me at the party, and we're all chilling, and they want to be able to brag about their boyfriend's best friend and former roommate. He's a big New York comic, and he came here, and he's great, and I can see why he's going to do wonderful in New York. I melted down. I focused on some lesbian couple, just asked them questions about being a lesbian like I'm a goddamn 17-year-old who just saw girls kiss for the first time. Like it's even important. Hey, so you guys only like girls? Why? Why? It's not like I haven't performed for lesbians before. Ugh. I wish there was a time machine, a goddamn DeLorean to go back and punch myself in the mush. Tried doing crowd work to faces that I know. Another reason why I didn't want too many people I know in the audience. I wanted my act to be general, and I don't want to just do crowd work. It's tough to do crowd work to people you know without acknowledging you know them, and that felt like cheating. And so I'd want to go into a crowd work riff and be like, and I'd think to myself, oh, you're one of my best friend's aunt. What the fuck am I going to do there? It's a meltdown. I believe I might have used this analogy in the past here. Let's just do it again. I love Royal Tannenbaums, and there's a scene when Luke Wilson takes he's a tennis player, champion tennis player, and he sees Gwyneth Paltrow, who's his adopted sister in the movie, with her new husband, and they have some weird incest shit going on, and he melts down. He takes his shoe off in the middle of a tennis match and lobs the ball up into the net. That's what I felt like, that kind of meltdown. I mean, I think I kept my shoes on, but I'm going to tell you, if someone was at that gig who's listening and sends a message to me saying I took my shoe off and fucking lit up a cigarette, even though I don't smoke, I'd believe all that shit. It was a goddamn meltdown. I wouldn't be shocked if I started, took my shoe off and started talking to it in a goddamn gig. I had 2-3 more days left in this city. Having to face my best friends and former roommates and all these people. And there's people there who used to work me, who used to run shows in town, and now looked at me. This girl, Shelly, used to run my home club, quote unquote, the club, the beach. They had Saturday night comedy and like a Thursday night comedy. And I ended up hosting a lot and getting spots every week. And stage time is valuable to me. And the last time she saw me, it was a weird compliment. She's like, man, you've gotten so good. I'm going to be honest, you used to suck, which is weird because I was on the fucking show every week, but whatever. And now she gave a stone look. Stout. She was dressed with it was really weird. She was dressed in like pinstripe suit on a Sunday night after the Super Bowl. Like she was in Harlem Nights with Red Fox, Richard Pryor, and Eddie Murphy. It's pretty interesting. But she just stared at me like, and you could just see it in her brain. Why did I tell you used to suck? You still suck, you fluke. That's the words in my head that I'm projecting that she was thinking, but I bet I'm pretty accurate. Homecomings. Did another homecoming a couple years later. It's probably a little more established in New York. And this great comedy journalist, Julie Seebaugh. She was a writer for the Las Vegas Weekly. She'd done all kinds of great stories on Sam Kinison and Doug Stanhope. And she's wonderful. She flew me out for a showcase. The money was great. It was called the Vegas Homecoming. There's a bunch of people who had left. And man, they had me closing this motherfucker out. I flew out on a Saturday. I was trying to outsmart myself. I thought that I could leave. If I left on Thursday or Friday and the gig was Saturday, my fear was that I would sit around for a couple days and get rusty and think too much of the gig. So what I do, I left at like noon in New York to land in Vegas at 5:30, get picked up by one of my boys, go get a big greasy burger in my jet-lagged stomach, go straight to the venue. That was packed full of friends and friends' family, and they bought tickets, and it was a draw, and shit was awesome. And it was outdoor at the Beauty Bar in downtown Vegas for years was Shit Salad, and it became a still Shit Salad, but they had some cool bars that they cherry-picked from New York and L.A., and just a beauty bar here, the Dresden, all this shit. Outdoor at the Beauty Bar, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and I think it was cold in New York when I left, and all this shit, and it was great. And I had to follow Sam Tripoli, who's crushing in Los Angeles, and he had left Las Vegas right before I started, but basically, I think I've mentioned this here before, Sam Tripoli is like my comedy grandfather, because a person he mentored, Pyro Pete, that's right, Pyro Pete, we can talk more about him in the future, he was like a mentor to me. And that's how he's explained to me. Tripoli came a couple times to our show at Boomers and would come and destroy, would fucking destroy and crush and show us amateurs in Vegas who thought we were swinging dick heroes and awesome that we weren't shit. Now I'm following him. And I believe he's done some TV spots. And here am I, the late night host at the former Laugh Factory in Times Square. And I requested theme music, and I was nervous. I thought the theme music would calm me down. Something that doesn't even pump up the crowd. It was Zero from the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. Maybe that was some foreshadowing of what I really thought of myself compared to everyone else. And Sam Tripoli, I was at Zero, and I went up there. And it wasn't quite Luke Wilson with the shoe off. But it was brutal. And I had so much family there. My mom, I don't even think my mom was at that show at Sunset Station. My mom was there, been newly separated from my stepdad, and she came out. And the look of disappointment. My boy, one of my best friends to this day, he brought like 8 of his family members paying tickets. They spent money on a Saturday. They could have been up playing poker and drinking at a good bar and not hearing cock jokes. And I closed this, and I closed it poorly. I think I did a little crowd work that got some reaction and did fine. I think it was probably serviceable, but at that point I wanted jokes and that to work. And it wasn't great, and Sam should have closed. And I went and got absolutely smashed and crashed at my buddies. I didn't even walk my mom to the car, to be quite honest. I was drinking in the back patio, trying to pretend it didn't matter, and try to pretend that I got laughs and that it was good. Deep down, my soul was a trench. It was a deep trench where I was burying emotion and sadness and disappointment. My buddy James Conway, who later became the lawyer of my family, walked my mom to the car. She's like, I'm going. I wanted to keep drinking. Well, I'm drinking, Ma. Thanks for coming out. Acting too cool for my goddamn mother. Didn't want to walk my mother because I was ashamed. I didn't want to be alone and have her tell me how bad I was or her lie.
buddy. You want some action on the big game? Maybe hit a parlay or two? Then listen to me, comedian Alex Pavone, and the hilarious Steve Sylvester, and my podcast, On Paper House Network. It's a fun look at the world of sports gambling. I'll bet the house, you'll love it. Buddy, What's the Bet? With Alex Pavone, only on Paper House Network.
The next day, I ate with her and my grandma and my aunt and uncle, and we talked about comedy, and I told my aunt, who wasn't there, I was like, you know, I kind of just trying to be fearless and speak whatever's on my mind and don't care. My mom was like, my mom said this, he sure does. I don't think my mom doesn't drink. I think she was drinking wine. Just like, now she's probably not disappointed. And these people aren't disappointed when you don't do well. They're probably more disappointed for us that we didn't do well, and that we're even questioning how they felt about us. But man, it's fucking tough. My aunt and uncle, who I mentioned, who were at that dinner that I was just at with my mom, who sighed and said, whew. They were at the Sunset Station. And they come and see me pre-COVID every Thanksgiving. They have Thanksgiving with me. And we go out the whole week and drink and eat. And they go to a couple shows. We were having drinks somewhere after, and people were asking. And my uncle let it slip. Yeah, I saw him that one time at that casino. And on the way home, I turned to my wife and was like, phew, he's not going to do too well at this, huh? And admit, it's like, now he's really funny. I kind of like that a couple drinks, I mean, he admitted it. It's good to know that people had seen you actually progress. And that they weren't drinking Kool-Aid for you. So what am I telling you in this episode? In this wonderfully self-serving episode? I wanted you to see and feel the fucking pain that I have felt. And that I understand anything any performer has gone through with their family. And feel shame for a minute and then get over it. Who cares? There's going to be more gigs. And a lot of people that you know aren't going to approve of what you do. And they're not going to like what you do. Even if you get good and you get on TV and you make a living doing this and you have a banging podcast, they're not going to agree with it. You will be funny on nights and they not really like you because you're not their cup of tea. You can't live and die by this. And a lot of people want to see you because they want to support you. And that's great. But a lot of times they just want to gossip and brag. Oh, my nephew's fucking hilarious. Oh, my girlfriend, you should see her. She's so funny. I'm so proud of her. They just want to, they want to be a part of something good. And they're going to root you on. They don't realize how much anxiety it causes us. Ultimately, don't worry about it. Once again, who are you doing this for? You're doing this for you, baby. For you. Yes, you want them to be proud. But let me ask you this. These are your options. This is the option for you. You could not make a dime in comedy. Never get booked on shows. You can only do open mics. But everyone who ever sees you at these open mics that is a friend, coworker, family member, spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, they all think you're great. But you have talked to the greatest soothsayer, psychic, visionary of all time. And everything this person says comes true. And they told you that you'll only work open mics, but everyone who sees you that you know loves you. Or the other option is everyone that knows and loves you, who comes and sees you, thinks you're terrible and you're not their cup of tea, but you're a working comic and you can get on TV, you can make a living, and you can be filled with audiences of strangers every night. You make them laugh, and people come up to you after who you've never met before and you'll probably never see again. Or like, you're really great. You're awesome. Thank you for being so funny. Those are your options. Strangers hate you, and or you can't get in front of them, only open mics with other comics. But when your friends and family come and see you, you're the funniest person they've ever seen. Or they hate you or don't get you, but you've made a living doing this thing that you love. And make strangers, who is what you're getting paid for, you're getting paid to make strangers laugh. You get to make them laugh every night, and you do that. Would you rather do that one? I think I know the answer, everyone, so don't worry about it. Your family will still pass you the goddamn mashed potatoes at the holiday. And if they don't because of your goddamn abortion joke, well, maybe we have to rethink some things. I gotta be honest, I needed this episode. We are releasing this a day late. And I was sad. I was disappointed today. You should also know that. I'll probably touch upon that in the next couple weeks. But I have some disappointment going on professionally that's puzzling me and hurts still. It never goes away. 20 years in, I have worked nonstop since the clubs have started. And that aspect's good, but a couple of things are not going great right now. And it stung and I took it personal. And you should know that you all are not alone, and it's going to be a lot of no's and a lot of times not getting love from people you want because it didn't work out that way. But we still move on. Time marches forward, and your creativity will as well. You're only down if you stay down. So I'm sorry that it took me forever to do this episode. I'm glad I did this episode. I'm not releasing the other one. And if you like this or don't like it, you can reach me at commissionercomedy@gmail.com. commissionercomedy@gmail.com. We appreciate you. Please support our sponsor, Silk City Hot Sauce. With promo code COMMISH, you can get 15% off some of the best exotic flavors of hot sauce you are going to find here, there, or anywhere. The pride of Vermont, the pride of the comedy community, Silk City Hot Sauce, are comedy fans like you, who when you have a disappointing night in front of your family, you can just throw some hot sauce all over the place. Sorry, my leg went dead and it fell. Silk City Hot Sauce, promo code COMMISH. Go, please support this podcast. Support someone who supports us. It means the world to us. It means the world to them. Go to their website. Get some great flavors of hot sauce. They have also maple syrup and other great products. Go get it now. It's awesome. Also, please support the other shows on this network, Paper House Network. Please support Paper House Network's sister. I don't know. I mean, it's not Sister Club. They are part of New York Comedy Club. Check out New York Comedy Club Sessions. Hot off the presses, me, Christina Hutchinson, Matt Richards, peers of mine who I adore, doing comedy routines with a band, three totally different takes. Mine is called Peanut Allergy. Go look for it, James Madden, Peanut Allergy, or New York Comedy Club Sessions. Please support this. Please spread the word with this. I'm not going to lie. A show I guest host on, played the track. And they kind of made fun of most of it. They ended up saying they liked it, but it stung and it hurt me. That's another reason why I was sad today. So if you can support and you like it, please do. Because I'm going to do more stuff with music. And it's going to be fun, and I really like doing it. And fuck it if people don't like it. There you go. There's that angst everyone likes. Mad love to Nick Angelo on production. Mad love to JSS1 with the artwork. MDMD with the music. Wink, wink. I hope to make an announcement with my upcoming comedy EP, The Check Spot, where I do a question and answer while people pay their bills at the toughest, worst part of a comedy show, The Check Spot, when bills are dropped at the same time and jokes go to die. I'm hoping to get a date soon and some announcements on what's going on with that. And people have reached out and they're excited, and I'm excited to get it out to y'all, and I'm excited that you want me to get it out to you, and that's just dope, baby. Keep supporting this podcast. Please follow us on Spotify. Please subscribe to us on Apple. Please give us a review on Apple. Please give us 5 stars. Please spread the word. A lot of you are, and it means the world to me. And if you don't have to reach out and agree with me or disagree with me on shit, like I encourage But man, if you just want to say hello and thank you and what it means to you, people have been doing that, and that's awesome. And thank you so much. Thanks for dealing with my neuroses and how weird I can fucking be. And thanks to listening to this episode where I had to whisper yell like a 1970s Florida wrestler in a promo. Because it's the middle of the night in Brooklyn and I have new neighbors. Shit, my lease ain't up till October. Fuck it all. Mad love to you all. Spread love. Get out there. Be as safe as possible. Do as much work as possible. And don't worry. You're going to fail in front of your friends and family. Act accordingly, baby. On to the next one. As long as you're getting them strangers going, you got a career, kid. You got a career.